I'm glad to be back in the area here. 35 years ago, Marchiori Road was my first home as a resident of Victoria. My daughters were students just across the road in the high school. Being a father of two daughters has been one of the great experiences of my life. However, it did lead me to one embarrassing moment. I love audience participation. One particularly extremely embarrassing moment. It was a winter's evening. I was coming home from South Melbourne on the Flinders Street to Blackburn train. It was crowded, as it was in those days, standing up all the way home. I got home and my wife said, "So how was the day?" And I said, "Oh, pretty good, apart from what happened on the train." "Oh?" "Well, it was a crowded train, I was standing up, I was reading my book, and I looked up a couple of times and people were looking at me with very strange looks. So, still standing up, I turned around this way and I continued to reading, and after a while I looked up and people were looking at me with very strange looks." "Oh," says my wife, "so what was the book?" I said, "You know, that one written by Elizabeth Elliot. And I was reading it to get some insights about my daughters, and then it hit me. Oh, the title, of course, there it was on the cover in such huge letters. Let Me Be a Woman." I was a man before my time. Months later, my wife visited the Nunawading Community House and she picked up a booklet, with a chart that caught my attention. So I hung on to it in the hope that one day I might need it. Well, it has helped me, that chart, and I'll show it to you in a while. So today is kind of like the inaugural unveiling of all that chart has meant to me and has spoken to me over many years. But before that, a little bit more of the background. You can see a theme here, feelings and peace. How do I make peace? The mystery of feelings. So about feelings, you may have heard the words from the hymn titled God's Word Will Stand Forever, which is said to be written by Martin Luther, but that's not clear that it was him. And I used to sing this song in church when I was a boy. Our feelings come, our feelings go, and feelings are deceiving. My warrant is the word of God, naught else is worth believing. Well, I certainly believed in the truth of God's word. I've spent my life seeking to know it more, to understand it better, and to live it out as a follower of Jesus Christ. But feelings were relatively foreign to me, and they were not considered important by my parents. The lines of this verse, "Our feelings come and feelings go and feelings are deceiving," those lines just confirmed to me that I didn't need to worry about them. Now, I did know, "Be angry and do not sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger." Well, I was never angry, was I? Because I ignored my feelings. And therein lay the seeds of a problem. I could be fuming on the inside, but I would never admit it. Now, bear in mind that we came to live in Blackburn after 9 years in Indonesia, where social relations revolve around not upsetting the apple cart, never offending, always covering with a smile. And in that culture of suppressed feelings, I had reached postgraduate level. And I recall one night in Marchiori Road, one of the lady members of our home group, she took me aside and said, "Look, you're obviously very good at your work, but I don't see you expressing any feelings. Why can't you show your emotions?" And I had no answer to her. It was like she's talking about a foreign concept. 10 years later, we moved to North Ringwood. I took long service leave and I went on an 8-day silent retreat. And I said to God, please show me how I need to grow. And in that retreat, a bit scary, but it was also a wonderful way of connecting with God through walking alone, quiet reflection, praying to be open. Well, I came home and like a bolt out of the blue, my wife said, I sure hope this retreat has changed you. I've had enough of your difficult ways and I'll wait and see, but if you're not different because of it, I am going to leave. At first I was very confused. Then I was hit by this swirl of devastating memories, clear and vivid action replays of my inappropriate behaviour. And I began to see my self-centred focus. I became bathed in all these negative feelings, suddenly aware of unfamiliar emotions. I felt hopeless, I felt dejected, filled with grief, and I imagined the word failed across my brow. For several days, I wandered aimlessly in the garden, panicking about what to do. And then a psychologist friend and her husband came to visit. The very same lady who had asked me that question at home group. This time her question was, how are you? I burst into tears and told her what I was feeling. She referred me to a men's group in Doveton, where most of the 50 men attending there were there under court orders, having already destroyed their marriage through violence. And I went for 3 hours every Thursday, gaining insight as I discovered the violence within me. For 16 months, I applied myself to the process of change with the help of that group. The hardest challenge every week was to come home and to share the content with my wife, then to listen and to take notes of her response without any comeback from me. Then I would bring her comments to the next week's meeting. Ouch! Another feeling. You know, nothing dented my pride more than the truth about how my family experienced me. I was far from being loving, tender, open to the people who loved me the most. How vulnerable they felt to my moody silences, my put-downs, my lack of openness, my need to have the final say and to always be right. Now, you might wonder, as I did early on, oh, is it really violence when there's no overt physicality, there's no bruises on the body, there's no loud threatening? But in 1996, back then, my wife had no hesitation in calling it violent. And she explained to me my use of logic to inhibit her freedoms, my overbearing control, my listening but not hearing, my disregarding her feelings. All of this, brothers, all of this was the harvest after 28 years of marriage to the woman who I loved. You know, it's easy to quote Jesus' words, the truth will make you free, though I think he might well have added, but first it must crush you. Sadly, I'd learned my responses from a great man of God, my father, who was revered by so many, but who'd never resolved the loss of his own dad when he was age 2, and then was subsequently abused as a teenager by his stepfather. Well, so much has happened, and I have persevered doing the work of changing my attitudes, my patterns, my behaviours. Just last September, we completed our 50th wedding anniversary, and we celebrated for a whole 12 months leading up to it. Would you just like to call out and tell us a feeling? What are you feeling at this moment? Anyone?
Sorrow.
Sorrow. Thank you. Others?
Disturbed.
Thank you.
Amazed. Expectant.
Thank you.
Stunned.
Thank you.
Grateful.
Thank you. In 1997, so after 16 months, I stopped going to men's group when World Vision assigned me to Africa. And there in Rwanda, I became their manager of reconciliation and peace building. It was a huge World Vision relief program with recovery works, rebuilding bridges, schools, clinics, establishing agriculture, healthcare, childcare programs. At my very first manager's meeting there, I heard some of the management group complaining of their staff going to healing events and using up valuable work time. So I asked permission to find out what was going on, and I participated in one of these healing events. Now, you can read the details in my book, From Genocide to Generosity. But I reported back to my fellow managers after attending, and I said, this healing work is not a luxury, it's an absolute necessity. And you'll be amazed at how your staff are changing. They're dealing with their painful pasts at their own pace. I predict they will double their productivity after this. The managers looked at me skeptically. They said, but John, how can you say that? You're new here. I smiled. Yes, I am new. But the process and the changes in participants here in Rwanda have great similarity to my own experience in the men's group in Australia. This healing work is about rehumanising people, people carrying inner hurts and bad memories that are unresolved. They said, the fellow managers, all right, we'll go ahead with more of this, but we do hope it won't disrupt our really important work. So now we're going to turn to the PowerPoint, and the first clue is that making peace is not by ignoring my feelings. Stay on this slide now, and I'll give you the clues or the cues if necessary. I gathered a few Rwandans who could make peace because they first became people of peace. Whatever we did, we aimed to connect it to the scriptures that underpinned our faith, and we grounded it in daily prayer. Our motto was work with the willing, and in 5 years, through this group, over 300 World Vision staff went through healing workshops, and after that, their spouses. Next. And youth, and then many people in the communities and in prisons in Rwanda. Eventually, 1,000 graduates trained as volunteer facilitators of peace at the grassroots. It was intense and impactful work. Next. During the genocide, Emmanuel's bitterness overflowed and he killed 14. He attacked Alice and left her for dead, but she was rescued, and they both attended the same healing workshop. It was months later after that that Emmanuel came to confess and to apologise to Alice, and they reconciled. Next. You can read about the wounds in Rwandan hearts in the book with the subtitle, Hatreds Heal on Rwanda's Hills. Now, you have also got a card with more information. You see that card? You see how it's got a white dot on it? I'll refer to that shortly. Copies are available today. Prosper is going to help you make the purchase. He will make it as easy and as simple as you can. If you don't have the $25, you can either pay what you can afford today, that's fine, or there are slips and you can do a direct deposit on the little table out there. Now, the book is written for a general audience, so you can safely get two copies and give one away to anybody. Next, Musabhimana and Buhanda. So, who killed and who survived? Well, the one on the right is Musabhimana. He's the man I hugged after I learned that he killed three people. Buhanda on the left is the man whose sister he killed, so whose sister was killed by Musabhimana, and Buhanda befriended Musabhimana, and together they go around telling the stories of their healing and their reconciliation. Next. So I want now to focus on the pain within us, and I'll shortly bring on the chart from the Ngunnawarring Neighbourhood House. But we're going to look at how unhealed wounds of the heart can lead us to violence. And you'll understand, of course, now that I don't agree with the words, you can't trust your feelings. In fact, I believe that every feeling is real and true and is a gift from God. But then the question is, what is the purpose of that particular feeling? Next. So, the chart portrays the grief cycle. It has it in three parts: a deep valley with a downhill slide, a trough at the bottom, and an uphill side. And I have developed a study guide of my book for use by small groups. That's what's referred to by the white dot on the card. And I use this chart that you're going to see in sessions 3 and sessions 4. So it plays quite a significant role. And that study guide is online. It's free. All you need is the book and some friends to work through it with it together. And again, it's for a general audience. Next. The grief cycle may start with anything: a shock, an agony, a betrayal, an abuse, a shame. Each loss wounds the heart for as long as it remains unaddressed, unspoken, and unresolved. In fact, any sort of grief and loss that has lain dormant within us is not dormant at all, because it grows into a root of bitterness. And Hebrews 12 has a verse about the root of bitterness that defiles many people. Next, let's look closer here at the downhill side. Just follow the words down. Loss is accompanied by a bundle of feelings: shock, numb, depressed, dejected, guilt, and despair. Now, there's no set order to these feelings. They're often jumbled together. But they are like a weight inside of us that easily leads to a sense of helplessness and hopelessness. That was the slope that I was on when I found I could no longer be proud of my behaviour in the family. Next. I describe my experience of the flood of these feelings this way: grief is a shovel that keeps digging deeper. Next. After my downhill, I hit a trough. I didn't know how to resist or to ignore the combination of the negative feelings that swirled around me. I became caught in a wave of self-blame that kept dumping me back into the black hole, leading me to the thought, I am trapped and I don't know what to do. Do we see some signs of this in our society today? You bet we do. It's in the media every day. I'm trapped and I don't know what to do. That's where suicidal thoughts begin. Next. At men's group, we discussed how these feelings easily burst outwards in expressions of anger that hurts others. There is a lot of danger in anger, because danger is the word anger with a D in front. The anger cohorts with three companions: hatred, resentment, and hostility. And I call this group the four fiery dragons. They traumatize children, abuse partners, break marriages, divide clans and countries, provoke war, and end in violence, both open violence and hidden violence. Next. As Gregory Roberts, the former long-term Australian prisoner and author, says, all violence begins as a wound in the heart. Cruelty, even my own acts of cruelty, begins as an agony in the self before it is inflicted on others. Indirectly, what I'm saying here is the very thing that stuffed me up as a human being and threatened my marriage, the very same thing led to the genocide in Rwanda. You have everything from home-based living to countries being torn apart coming from this kind of inner unhealth. Next. So, how do we get out of this bind? Is there a prospect of relief? Is there a source of hope? You know, some never do get out of this. Some find it safer to be stuck, and it's so easy to deny that I need help, or I might just be too busy to recognize it. I might be unaware of what is causing this. And so the dragon fires burn on, doing their damage in the stuck person. Next. Some say that my faith is sufficient. Well, you see, that didn't work for me, and it didn't work for millions of Christians in Rwanda either. Many in this situation who say my faith is sufficient actually find themselves losing their faith because the inner pain feels like a poison and their faith is not rescuing them. However, we may choose to seek some form of healing, to find relief and a way out. Next. That can only start when we seek the truth behind the threats, which can occur once we accept that anger is the second feeling. Anger is the part of the iceberg that rises above the surface. So we actually have to hang around the dragon long enough to find out what's firing the dragon up, what's under the surface. You will always find an original feeling hidden under the surface. That is the feeling that needs to be found and faced, and it works wonders for those who choose to do that. Next. So the way to begin to climb the hill of change is to bring out what is below the surface. We've got to go fishing. This is where change starts: hooking the feeling, absorbing the message, responding appropriately. Next. This kind of work normally requires at least one other supportive person or a group who listens to the story. One person seems to be the Western preference, but people from the majority world prefer a group led by a facilitator. In Rwanda, the need was so great we had no choice but to use groups. The first change is always relief. How does it come about? Whenever we speak about our pain, whenever we admit our stuckness, our dismay, our shock, our hurt, our loss, something changes within us when we do it, ever so slightly. It leads to release. When the emotional intensity drops a little inside of us. Each time I speak about my pain, a little bit of the pressure reduces. This enables me to be true to myself, to accept my difficult past. And it also opens a connection with others in the group who accept what I say and don't try to correct it or minimise it or change it. Next. These three steps then lead to space for growth in other dimensions, in forgiving, in thankfulness, in faith, in trust and love. And the stories in the book illustrate the huge potential for such changes, even after unbelievable suffering and deep trauma. Next. Now, this all may feel elusive because in our world, reason tends to rule over feelings. So we hear phrases like this: just get over it. Oh, it's nothing really. Oh, let's move on. Just, you have to forgive and forget. Now, these are sentiments that block healing because you cannot heal what you cannot feel. Next. By contrast, the feelings of the rising slope involve healing, the release of hope, the slow return of confidence. Now, all of this requires the courage to try and to give it a go. That's why in Rwanda our motto was "Work with the willing." Only those who had the courage to try could begin. But their changes then became like shining lights to others. Next. So to slightly change the common mottos that I just used, we could say, just get into it. It's really something. Look back and heal. You cannot forget and you are not yet able to forgive. Being real about these things. Next. The changes I saw in men at Doveton were repeated in men and women of Rwanda. It's not magic. It's not instant. It is the hard work to take time to look at my truth. Next. I was helped by these quotes from Lincoln, our Kenyan psychologist in Rwanda. Everybody has a wound to heal, a pain to bear, a story to tell. And without healing, forgiveness is impossible. And the key to all of this is a wound must be opened before it can heal. Next, I'm going to invite Prosper to read three brief comments from the book, from these three pages. So these are comments from Rwandans who've been through a healing process. Thank you, Prosper.
The first one is from Makoriko. What he says, I now know how understanding grief prepared me to experience the emotions that were a consequence of loss. I saw that some of the emotions were very positive and others of them were negative. I was not to ignore the negative emotions, but to work out the appropriate behavior that would allow me to express those emotions without damaging other people. The second one is from Sabamungu. When I joined the healing work, it helped me deal with my past. I was able to pour out all the pain of my childhood experiences. I started learning how to love and to give affection to my children. I'm still learning. The third one from Saviera. I need to move from being a victim, which allowed me to claim the right to take revenge and to threaten my offenders. I also wanted to be free from the pain which consumed my energy, haunted me with memories, and blocked my hopes. By sharing with others and helping them, I began to be liberated from my own bondage and self-pity, sorrow and anger and hatred.
Amakuru, we may not live in the past, but the past lives in us. That's why we need to make peace with our past hurts. The gradual climb out of being stuck is an individual journey with the support of persons who have no hidden agenda or axe to grind. There's really only one requirement to commence the change: to take the risk to face my feelings, to accept the truth of how I am at this moment. You know, Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, they'll be called my children." To make peace, I must first be at peace. That journey to peace saved my life. That journey to peace changed my life, saved my marriage, took me to Rwanda, and brings me here today.
Thanks, John. We're going to have some time for questions and answers. If people want to ask a few questions of John, and then there's going to be a response back from John to finish off with. Mark.
Probably two questions. The first one is, can feelings really be trusted? And the second one is, we're in control of our feelings. It's we decide how to feel.
Are they questions or statements, Mark?
Yeah.
Well, the second one particularly. My answer is yes, I can trust every one of my feelings because I believe feelings are a signal from God that I must pay attention to something. And the way I describe it is that they're like traffic lights. We still have red, yellow and green. So some feelings are green, which is, wow, that's fantastic, let's celebrate, go ahead. Others are yellow, which is, be careful. Feelings that are about be cautious, be sensitive, think more about this. And then there are the red ones. Whoa! So my answer is yes. That's what I've discovered. And then the second one was, we're in control of our feelings. Well, yes and no. We are in control of our feelings to the extent that we know what our subconscious is doing to us. But I don't think we're always conscious of that. I looked last night at a definition of emotions. This has helped me for quite some time. Emotions are sensations received. So something that has happened to us from the outside, feelings that turn out with that, and then there's a charge. A charge is added, which is an emotional charge from previous experiences. So we need to be in control of our feelings, but in control in the sense of we recognise when the feeling has come and we honour it. We respond out of that feeling. So
So there's no autonomy there in a way. We don't surely we choose as to...
There's no autonomy in the sense that we don't choose the feelings to come. No, the feelings come to us.
I think I found really useful you talking about feelings are trustworthy, but you have to understand the purpose of the feeling. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that if I'd like you to, perhaps it might be helpful if we explored the purpose of our feelings. So, for instance, if I feel that I'm in love with a woman that's not my wife, that's a real feeling, but it's what we're going to do with that feeling. So it's obviously an indication that I've behaved inappropriately, I've allowed that feeling to develop. So can you just talk a bit? It's a trustworthy feeling because it's revealed something, but what am I going to do with it?
Yes, well, for me, that would be a red light feeling because of my Christian commitment and my desire to stay with the rest of my life with my wife as long as I live. So I don't know that I can say much more than that. Feelings clearly are an integral part of who we are, and the kind of feelings we have, I think, are related to our personalities as well. So my wife has feelings that are bubbling out all of the time that I think, well, no, that's not for me. If you do want to go further, I recommend this book called The Balance Within. by Esther Sternberg, The Balance Within. She gives a lot of thought to it. Does that leave you with a follow-up comment or question?
No, I found useful when you're talking about the purpose of feeling, and I just was trying to work out where Mark was coming from as well.
Okay, good.
That sometimes I've acted on my feelings and that was a wrong thing to do. So it's also helpful to know that the feeling's real and it can be trusted to the extent that it's revealing something.
Yes, that's where the trust is. The trust is not, oh, okay, I'll follow this feeling.
So I think it's probably a bit dangerous saying that just so that feelings are trustworthy, because we need to unpack that a little bit, because they're trustworthy to the extent that it's revealing something about our life experience, but they're not necessarily a universal guide. So my love for a woman that's not my wife's not a gift from God. It may be a gift from God if it shows that that feeling, I allowed that feeling to develop, therefore I've acted inappropriately. Therefore it's a trust, therefore it's a signal that something's not right.
Yes.
But it's not, if you said to a general audience, our feelings are trustworthy, that would give me a license to act on my feelings.
I find
without
this
further discernment.
I find this a very helpful qualification, and thank you for it. I guess I have tried to cover that. Now, I think of it with the words, I need to pay attention to. Maybe as Christians we put trust and obey too closely together in the example you gave, and we need to separate them. But no, that's really helpful input. Thank you. Yes.
John, thank you. Thank you for what you've shared today, and I certainly can relate to some of that, a lot of that in terms of my life. And what I wanted to explore with you was first of all, actually, I wanted to also say thank you for actually recognizing that our pains and hurts of the past are things that we need to deal with in a real way, not just simply forgive. Because to get to the point of forgiveness, you still need to recognize all the issues and how it's affected you. And that's kind of why I was stunned, because I was realizing how much you had to work through. And to me, that was very useful. I could relate to that. Yeah. What I wanted to explore with you, if you got a minute or so, is someone once said to me, when you forgive someone, you give them permission to do it again. I don't actually agree with that comment, but there's a challenging comment, because also we see Jesus on the cross crying to his Father, Father, forgive them, when he's in incredible pain spiritually and physically, in agony. So there is an element of forgiveness where we have to also let go. But I'm not so sure that that means that they have permission to keep doing it again and again. Because I don't quite see that those two things working together. Yet the whole issue of forgiveness is probably one that seems to me we need to actually understand better in our hearts, not just in our heads.
Mm. Yes. Yes, I've never heard that that idea proposed. I suppose theoretically that's true. But there is a power in forgiveness that affects the recipient, if they are a recipient. Because the problem in Rwanda, you see, was there was so much chaos, a lot of people didn't know who had killed their loved ones or who had cut off their hand or so on. And forgiveness is such a broad spectrum. But primarily for the forgiver, it's about letting go, because the Greek word to forgive literally means that, let it go. That's what they do with the rubbish. They take it out and let it go. Letting go of my bitterness. So that's the inner effect on me, and the right to revenge, which is the effect on the other. Now, in a sense, it does give permission for them to hurt it again. But nobody's ever come to me and said, that's what happened when I forgave the person. But there's a context for that, because, there are Christian pastors who are advising women who are subject to abuse, go home, forgive your husband and live with him, and they continue to suffer. Now, I don't agree with that, because there are what we call the two hands of forgiveness. And I learnt this from two widows in Rwanda. The left ham, which of course in that culture is the hand that would carry the things that are less clean, I have let go of my bitterness and my right to revenge, but the right hand of forgiveness, what you did was wrong. And I want to know, what are you going to do to contribute something to the healing or the restoration of Rwanda? You can't bring back the dead person, but what are you going to do to show your sorrow, your remorse, your recognition of the loss that you caused? Maybe it's that right hand that would stop them coming back to hurt the person, perhaps. Because that is a position of amazing, an amazing gentle form of authority. But it's a call for justice as well, which is often totally missed in the forgiveness scenario. Have a look at the study guide too, because there's 2.5 sessions on forgiveness, and there's a powerful story. I won't tell you which section it's in, or you'll go straight to it and jump over the rest. There's a powerful story by a famous Rwandan singer. Is that right? Would John Paul Samputu be famous? By Samputu. We recorded him last year, and he tells that testimony in one of those sessions there. It's one of the most powerful and clearest stories I've heard, and of course accompanied with his music as well. Bill.
Thanks. In the past there's been, or present too for some people, in the Christian church about healing of memories. Could you make any comment between what you're saying and what happens with that, and any comment would be helpful.
Do you have a particular question in relation to here, or concern or uncertainty?
Well, how effective, perhaps.
Okay.
And probably in that scene there's more emphasis on the Holy Spirit or some... I don't know. I've found your comments very helpful, and need to do some more exploring.
Okay,
but that's one of the things that's that has been, in a sense, a prayer ministry of things that I've gone to in the past, and probably there's more to happen.
Yes, I think you've highlighted a really good point, that in a sense there are two kinds of healing of memories processes, one being the prayer and the intercession and the seeking to bring the Spirit, and I think that's really good and really important, and that has helped many, many people. The other step of the healing memories is the kind of a psychological process. And in fact, of the three workshops that I adopted in Rwanda to use in our work, of the three, one of them is actually called Healing of Memories, which has now been changed rather wisely to One Step in the Healing of Memories. And each of our three processes that we used were developed in Africa, on African soil. They're not brought in from the outside, one from South Africa, from Father Michael Lapsley, who some of you would know, and then the other two were actually created on the ground in Rwanda. And that's probably the bit that some people say, my faith is enough, and that seems to work for some people, a limited number of people, but then for others it's the hard work of going into my past, and there's certainly emotional, there's certainly psychological work that needs to be done, and educational work as well.
John, thanks very much for all you've shared this morning. One of the things that strikes me about men is that we learn some things at school, and one of the things is that you can't show your feelings, because as soon as you do that, you know, you're going to be ridiculed and life will be very, very difficult. So the whole issue of reflecting, we learn that lesson pretty well because it's a pretty tough lesson that most boys particularly have to learn. It leads us to a view of life that says, I don't need any help. Help is the last thing that most folks need, as I'm sure you know. Would you like to sort of comment about that and how blokes, you know, struggle with that whole issue of development, of needing to tough things out? That's a lesson, I believe, that most of us here learned early in the schoolyard.
Mm-hmm. I agree entirely, and in fact I learned it even before I got to school. Again, I'd like to see a balance here, because I think the toughen up, do the hard thing is important. We shouldn't lose that. But unless we have a revolution in our country of understanding the role of feelings, we will never get on top of the suicide problem. And I'm not saying we'll resolve everything, but we will change things for many, many people. And therefore, you know, tomorrow's the United Nations International Day for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. That's tomorrow. But slogans, just say no, it's not doing anything. And I've actually been proposing this week a slogan that says, violence, let me as a man deal with the violence within me, and then I'll be in a position to change myself and then to say to others, let's say no to violence. In my thinking, I haven't got that far yet, but it's one of the reasons I've created the study guide, is to get out from Rwanda what we've learnt there. Goodness gracious, you've seen a photo of a guy who killed 14 people today, who goes around with the grace of Christ on his face and goes unashamedly into schools and into prisons, and he's not an educated man telling people about this. The day we start to see that here, instead of jolly safe schools, I won't add another word there, unless we have that change, we will remain in that problem.
This is thanks, John, for sharing, because there's so many things that I'm still working on, and as I mentioned my talk last time I was talking here in Rwanda, it's something really, it's a journey and we're still changing. The one I found which is has resonated with me is the message from Sabamungu, where he said, when I joined the healing work, he helped me deal with my past. I was able to pull out of the pain of my childhood experiences, and I start learning how to love and give affection for my children. This is something which we find, like, especially in Rwanda, the affection, it's not something we really, it's not common. It has been, as a father, I will provide. And that's how I show my affection to my child. And I guess the question I would like to ask is, how do you find, because what I find is in the society, we tend to blame and use our past to justify our behavior. I'm doing this because I didn't get affection from my father, and this is the reason I'm behaving this way. And that, how do you find, or how can we justify people who use the blame of their past to try to come up with the reason of the behavior?
Thank you. Great question. The only way that I know is by telling stories. Virtually all the transformational work in Rwanda involves stories in small groups, so that the person who is still bound by their past see, hears the story of someone who has moved beyond that and then starts to ask, well, how did that happen to you? What's been the consequence? Can you help me think about that in my own life? It's this work with the willing again. And I've tried to make a contribution in session 5 of the study guide around that. I remember on one of my trips going with for a week with a group of World Vision staff, and the material that's in session 5 I went through with them. Almost without exception, by the end of the day they were weeping and saying, we see all the things we're dumping on our children, we hadn't thought about it. So this is all around the concept of I'm okay, you're okay. It's in there in session 5 because I think the more who know this and who practice it, the more change will come.
So you told us your story back, you know, with the crisis with your wife. So that happened once. My question is, so you move on in life, there's more hurts. Was it a once-off for you, or have you had to go through this dip multiple times?
Multiple times. Here's where, you know, Jesus' words in, what is it, in Luke 16, I think it is, that you forgive, you know, 70 times 7, or you keep repeating the forgiveness. I can only see that a marriage holds together because there's forgiveness every day in it. Now, that doesn't mean confronting my wife and saying, you upset me. It means me choosing to let go of that thing that didn't appeal to my personality that she did or said. It's choosing the right times to speak with her and say, look, I'm a bit upset about what you did then. Can we talk about it? But probably for every time I do that, there's probably 10 incidences where I have this annoyed feeling. And I have to say, well, honestly, that's because she's a different personality. And I'm not going to put fences there to say you can't do that, which is what I did for the first 28. So you handle it on the similar principle, but it becomes easier to do and becomes more of the joy of the work of sustaining a marriage.
John, I know you're going to wrap up in a second, but I just want to thank you for... It's been a very, very interesting talk. You've had a lot of questions. I'm sure there's still more will come if they're... I think you said you can stay behind and answer those. Thank you so much for coming and sharing with us. And I encourage you to get hold of the book if you want to. I'll let you finish off, John, because I know you wanted to wrap up.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. And actually, this is the first time I've presented this. I've just been creating it over the last few weeks. It's amazing how it takes 20 years to get some of the things clear in your mind, and that was part of God's leading. And so for me, it's been a great privilege to come and share and to come back here. Now, there's one more slide for each of you. There are 5 possible actions you might take today by way of response. The first one is, there may be some of you say, help, I need prayer today. Now, if you're in that situation, I asked Bill, would it be possible to get a few men who are willing to pray, so who could stay and pray with you now, if I could get those few men just to stand up so you can see who is available to do that. Okay, good. So there are brothers you can go to say, would you pray with me? I also will be willing to do that, although there may be questions as well that I need to respond to. So the second response is to talk. I need to talk with somebody about what's going on. I need to open my heart to someone. That's a perfectly valid and important need, and perhaps you can single out someone who you know or trust, and maybe they can't do it today, but but they'll make a time tomorrow. But I encourage you, if you feel like there are things in there that you want to get out, make a link with somebody to do that. Thirdly, yes, I want to know more. I will read the stories. Buy the book. A lot of people say it's heavy. I was told that again yesterday by two people. And they say, I can only read a couple of pages a night. That's fine. It's ironic that the most traumatised Australian person that I've interacted with over the book said, I can't read because of my trauma. But a week later, 10 days later, was it? She wrote to me and said, I'm up to page 111 of it. just great. Then some of you will say, yes, not only will I read the book, I want to join a small group to use the guide to go deeper, which is what it will help you do. And then, yes, I would like a prayer partner. Now, this might be a bit from left field today, but I remember about 30 years ago when a young man sat next to me at the church we were going to in Bayswater. And he said to me, so who prays with you? And I said, nobody. Nobody's ever offered. He said, I'd like to offer to be a prayer partner. And we have maintained that over 30 years. And in fact, I'll be staying at his house next Wednesday night. That's something about an ongoing camaraderie, sharing and caring. That's happening a lot in Rwanda. And please do remember, there's a diocesan prayer guide that you could start using. It begins tomorrow. It's called Preventing Violence Against Women. It's prayers for 16 days. The last slide is, if you like, a benediction. Brothers, so let us continue coming with courage to the throne of God's favour to obtain mercy and to find spiritual strength to help us when we need it. So it's our courage, God's mercy, and the strength that God will provide when we need it. Amen.
Well, thanks, John. So please, you saw the people that are available for praying with. If you want to pray about it, or if you want to talk to some other people, we encourage you to do that. Again, John, thanks very much for coming and doing that. I hadn't realised it was the first time you've actually presented this. So for me, a great way to finish the men's ministry for me, and to have you talking like that. And a great way to finish the year. So thanks very much.